Hello and welcome to the Developer's Guide for Windows 10 Insider Preview. I'm Andy Wigley, and with me got Jerry Nixon.
That's right. This is going to be an exciting module where we get to talk about XAML, basically the XAML controls that we have in our toolbox for building Windows applications. Pretty exciting. I like XAML quite a bit, Andy. I think you do too.
Yep. So XAML is the premier native technology for developing great UI for Windows apps. And you're going to take us through all of the pretty much a quick fly through all of the main controls that we're going to be working
yeah,
with.
Yeah, that's the goal. So I think before we talk about anything technical, we should talk about something practical, and that's the emerging XAML story. The emerging XAML story is pretty brilliant, and it kind of deals with the issues of what's the future of XAML and things along that line. So kind of let's begin. Let's talk about, first of all, this idea of standardization. So what's beautiful is Windows is made up of several different UI technologies. And it, you know, that's a level of effort for maintenance in Windows that they wanted to get away from. So they began standardizing on one UI technology. Which one did they choose? They chose
XAML.
They chose XAML. And you know, that is both a blessing and a curse because, you know, Windows has a really high, or really low is a better way to say it, really low threshold for tolerating performance. So that meant that the XAML team had their work cut out for them in order to make XAML perform well enough to be able to be used inside Windows, but they did. And what's beautiful about that is you as the developer get to benefit from that because now XAML is all the better because of it. Another area of standardization is around Office. So that's a major product made by a major software company here in Seattle.
Yeah, and it's in fact the, you know, first party apps across the board are first major app. Yeah. Who would that be?
Yeah, first party.
Yeah.
Is there a lag? There's some sort of 7-second lag here?
Yeah. Let me continue. All of the out of the box first party apps that you're seeing and enjoying in Windows 10 are built using XAML.
So Office is a major source of work for Microsoft, of course. And so they also have high standards around not just performance, but also functionality. So a lot of things needed to go into XAML in order to make it something that the Office team could choose to rewrite Office into. They did. The benefit for you, the developer, of course, is now not only do you have this extended and wonderful performance thanks to what the Windows team requires, but you also have this breadth of functionality thanks to what the Office team requires. And then, just like Andy was saying, we have our first party apps, used to be called the Bing apps, now they're called, I believe, MSN apps. I think it's still MSN apps. Either way, they, of course, but on the whole, are all XAML applications as well, all having different and crazy scenarios that enable XAML to, that better to say, that use XAML to fill those holes. And so when XAML is missing a little piece here and there, those first-party apps drive XAML into those scenarios. And so now you have performance, features, and sort of, I guess, crazy scenarios thanks to all of the standardization across Microsoft. So is there a future to XAML, Andy? There's no way to say it. Of course there has to be because it's the future. It's the UI platform for Windows. It's what we've rewritten Office in, and it's what all of our first-party apps are in as well. Really, XAML is a tremendous declarative technology already, and it's only getting better because of all of these things that are going on. At its heart, XAML is foundational to Windows. That makes XAML a key and core technology to Microsoft as well. So that's really great. All right, a quick shout out to WPF. I know that this is a course on Windows development. And so sometimes we refer to that as Windows XAML. So it's not the WPF XAML, which is the father of all XAML for us. And it's important to know that WPF is a core component of .NET. And .NET is a core component of the operating system. And so they roll together, right? .NET can't go anywhere without WPF, and the operating system doesn't go anywhere without .NET. And so you get this really robust relationship that revs everything at the same time. Meanwhile, a lot of love is being given to WPF even now to rev it up to have even more functionality, some touch support, amazing tooling that's coming in Visual Studio 2015 as well. So that's important to say, but also the new version of WPF Also, well, I don't want to say it that way. Windows 32 applications also have access to these modern APIs as well. So Andy, over the next several courses, is going to be talking about some amazing APIs that Windows apps can do, including interaction with the store. And these are all things now available to WPF as well. So if nothing else, take away this, that as XAML continues to innovate, one of the ways that it innovates is in WPF as well. And if did we already talk about this? I feel like we just talked about this. Did I say that if it was my money to pay for it? I feel like I just said that. Anyway, either way, if it was my money to pay for it and I was building a line of business application, I would be building it in WPF. WPF is the premier go-to technology for desktop applications, even in the face of Windows apps. Windows apps and the technologies around it can really enable an amazing consumer experience, but sometimes leaves gaps to fill around line of business enterprise apps. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. I want to talk about tooling. We have Blend. Blend is truly the XAML developer's IDE. Of course, we know now that it uses the Visual Studio shell, which includes feature after feature that Visual Studio had, but Blend didn't, and now it does.
Things like it's now a great code editor as well. You get all of the features of IntelliSense, and these kind of essential features are now included into Blend because it's essentially the same IDE underneath the hood. So it's a great tool for whether you're a coder or designer, but it's primarily aimed at sort of, you know, UI development features.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Things like storyboarding and visual states.
Yeah, animations, visual states, behaviors.
Okay, so that's the high-level discussion around XAML. I'm really excited about the future of XAML and the kind of the direction that it's going in today, the level of investment that's going into it also. But now let's just talk about the XAML controls in your toolbox. So first, we'll talk about some design considerations and what benefits you get from the controls that are in your toolbox. The first is we know around responsive, adaptive, and tailored design. This is the idea of your app app responding to changes in size and also whether or not what type of device it's on. Well, that's exactly the way that the controls were made as well. So the controls that you drag off already detect whether or not it's a mouse, already detect whether or not it's a finger gesture, and they adjust accordingly. They detect what sort of family you're on, what size they fit in, the size of hit point that it needs for a button. Things like that are all sort of taken care of for you. So let's start with the categories of controls. The first one would be the layout controls. And so you can see there's a little animation for one of our layout controls called the split view. That's new in Windows 10, right? Kind of enables this extended menu. But let's start at the top. We have a border control. And the border control you're going to see less and less of because now the border control is embedded into almost every UI element in XAML, which it used to be. If you wanted a border around something, you would wrap it with a border. That's no longer necessary if there's a canvas right below it.
So you've now got border properties on pretty much every UI element.
Because it was just a needless extra piece that cluttered your tree, so to speak.
Yep.
So the canvas is a lot like the HTML canvas. You set the top and you set the left of whatever item goes into it. And it doesn't scale in any way that's automatic. It totally relies on you, Andy, to be able to calculate where things go based on the screen size. If the screen size changes, you calculate it again. It's really terrific when it comes to things like games and ultimate control of exactly where things are. Then there's the grid. Sort of reminds me of, the HTML table. Kind of lay out the columns and lay out the rows the way that you want to, and you can make those percentages or pixels either one so that it can grow and shrink in a responsive way if you want it to. Relative panel is new.
It's a new one, yeah. So we're going to be talking a lot about that when we look at adaptive UI. But essentially it's how you can lay out controls within it. This is a layout control, so it has children inside it. So you put controls in and you can position those children relative to each other. And it's why it's valuable is it's really great for creating these adaptive layouts that do sort of change position of things as the screen gets wider or narrower.
That's right.
It's a key tool in creating an adaptive UI. And like I said, we've got a whole module coming up on that where we're going to be looking at how you use it.
So any control that as it grows, it gets bigger, may go off the screen, you want to scroll it back into the screen. Most controls don't have a built-in scroll viewer, so instead we have the scroll viewer control that you wrap around it and set its vertical or horizontal scrolling. It also has the ability to zoom in, which is really a neat feature of scroll view. So if you want that pinch zoom sort of effect on an image. Just wrap it in a scroll viewer and you've got it for free. That part's really great. We also have this split view, so that's what the animation was over on the side. That ability to use the hamburger menu,
yep.
Or really you can use it for a lot of different things. It doesn't have to be the hamburger menu, but it absolutely enables that with a series of display modes that you can do. The stack panel is probably most common, I would think. I don't know, maybe grid's the most common. That'd be an interesting little number to know. Stack panel just allows you to lay controls out either in a vertical stack or a horizontal stack. It's easy as that, and super useful. And then we have the variable size wrap grid, which lays things out in a uniform way, but allows you to span multiple columns and rows to be able to make them to vary the size. That's why it's called variable size. The last one is view box, which sometimes gets misused. That's probably not the right word, but it's the thing that you can wrap it, set the size of the view box to scale with your app size. And as you do, all of its content scales automatically. And it's sort of like an auto zoom sort of feature that it has. And it's very, very nice if you use it in small doses. But as soon as you aren't paying attention, it allows your button and hit target to get so small that there's no possible way you could ever tap it. Yeah. So you have to be sort of careful. Let's look at the syntax of how these things are put together. The canvas, it's just as easy as you would think. You'd lay things out in a canvas. And everything sits right on top of one another because it defaults in the top left. And we, anyway, then we have attached properties like left and top. And as soon as you put left and top into, let's say this ellipse, you can move it down anywhere that you want to. And another feature, left top, is also z-index. That is the only control that really allows you to move things forward and back along the z-index of the layout. Really, there's no other way. Otherwise, it's the ordinal position inside the tree that you have to do. So Canvas, easy to use. You see it a lot with games where people want to really control it. The stack panel is just like we said before. You can see this one is set to its default orientation of vertical. I would set its property orientation equals horizontal to go left and right. And no matter what you put in there, it just stacks them up. And it puts everything against the, in this case, it's the left, but I can tweak that as well. And then that obeys things like margins and stuff like that. Again, stack panel, you see it all the time. This grid has three rows and three columns defined. And it kind of brings in an interesting thing around the idea of length inside XAML that's special. So you can see the first row, its height is set to auto. And there's three variations to that. There's auto, there's star, and then there's a number, like the actual pixel size. And so auto says, whatever I put in there, just make room for it. And so as it grows and grows and grows, it's going to make room for it. But it's worth saying that it won't make room forever. Eventually, it'll run out of room, and it'll start clipping. So auto is really great if you don't know the exact height, and it's going to vary just a little bit. But if it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, eventually you're going to run out of control around it, and it'll start to clip. But yeah, that's what auto gives us.
Yeah, and this example here, you can see that the second row down with the index of 1 has set itself to the height of that green polygon. Because that's the, it's set itself automatically to that size. And the star one, the ones, that means basically take up all the rest of the space that's available.
That's right.
And you can have multiple star columns, and you can put a weighting on them. And it will split it up according to that weighting. So
if one star and another one with one star, they share an even amount.
50% each of the available
one star
space,
and then a two star, one is a third of
the other 66. Yeah, so it's very versatile, great way of laying stuff out.
The final one and the easiest one to really understand is the one of pixels. And so these are not screen pixels, by the way. Nothing in XAML is screen pixels. Everything is effective pixels. So this is a calculated value for what a pixel is that we'll describe more in the adaptive UI session. But nonetheless, the third possible option after auto and star is the exact number that you want it to be, representing a kind of pixel. So there's also the wrap grid. So the wrap grid takes multiple items, puts them in a uniform way, and wraps them in a grid. And each grid cell is defined by the first item that goes in. So you can see the first item that went in was the blue. That's 220 by 220, so the grid's quite large. Once it comes down to the red ellipse, that ellipse, there's plenty of space around the edge because it's actually determined its cell size based on the blue rectangle that's there.
Yeah.
So you see wrap grid, you only can use this inside an items control or some sort of repeater control that we'll talk about here in just a little bit. You can also make it so it defaults a different direction as well. So here's that scroll viewer. We talked about how the scroll bars aren't automatically available, but they're easy to add. You take, for example, this stack panel with a lot of different items in it. All we did was wrap a scroll viewer. Don't even set any values. Just let its default kick in. And you can see it's really nice. It adds that scroll bar to the side. And all the interactions that you would expect for touch or you would expect for a mouse or the fact that the scroll bar changes its look based on different devices, all handled for you. So that gets a lot of new developers, to be honest, because they don't know how to add a scroll viewer.
And this view box, this is the one you're saying, where it effectively scales everything that's put inside it. So here we've got the same layout of child controls, one at kind of normal height, if you like, and then the second column has within it a view box. Mm-hmm. And that sizes, anything that's placed in it is sized according to fit the available container, which is dictated in this case by the size of that column.
So you've said stretch equals uniform. That means it doesn't skew it or anything like that, so you can see it made it smaller. But there are other features as well where you could make it so it just fills it and it goes ahead and skews it to fill that space. Again, the U-Box does everything. Very nice. Here's that relative panel. And the relative panel is very special because the children inside it are related to each other as far as where they are positioned. So you start with some sort of anchor. So you could see how maybe the red rectangle represents an anchor that you say is related to the outer panel. So in this case, it would be to the top left of the outer panel. But then the yellow, is that yellow or orange? Well, the yellowish, the gold,
yes,
colored box. Well, that's to the right of the red rectangle. And you align it their tops. So you do both the positioning and the alignment. But then the green, you could see, it could also be to the right of with its bottom aligned, but it could also be below the gold one. It kind of just depends on how you want to define it. What's beautiful about this over a grid is those are the properties that I need to manipulate as I start rearranging my app to make it an adaptive app. So it's very, very powerful to do these with just simple properties,
yep,
rather than a nice complicated grid that might
way of doing this would be have a big grid and have sort of empty cells and empty columns, and then you're manipulating child controls and moving content around from one grid row to another grid row, and it's all kind of complicated and messy, difficult to visualize. Much, much neater with a relative panel, much easier to do that kind of thing.
Lots of designers and lots of developers were asking for an ability to easily create a split view or really easily create a hamburger pattern inside their application. That's where the split view comes in, and it has four display modes. The first display mode is this inline, which basically says move the text over. The second display mode is overlay, which basically says don't move the text over, just shows it over the text, leaving the content, I say text, but I just mean content, leaving the content alone. So you can see how the content continues to stretch under the display, and then using a light dismiss, it can go away or programmatically go away. Then they have this compact inline. So it's just like the inline above, only when you close the pane itself, there's a small compact bar that's still visible that you can put glyphs and things like that.
Yeah.
And then just like above, there's kind of this compact overlay. So the compact is always visible, but the overlay extends over that without moving your content. So anyways, there's a lot of different settings for this, but it allows you to have a bunch of different possible scenarios and allow for the split view to meet the needs of all of them. So it certainly isn't saying go and create a hamburger button application.
No.
What it's saying is, if you want to, we enable it.
That's right? One of the scenarios that's enabled by this control.
Right. So buttons are the next group of types of controls you have in XAML. These, are, of course, very important. So we have just the standard button, which is interesting because it doesn't have a text property. I think a lot of developers start by wondering, how do you put the text into the button?
But it's the content.
This is a content control. This is not a text control.
The point of that, I guess, is you can put anything in a button. You can make anything into a button.
Like an image.
Yeah.
I could put, if I wanted to have an image to show.
Yeah.
Or an image and text, right? Yeah. I could put a stack panel in a button. I could put a grid in a button.
Yep. Yeah.
I could put a split view in a button.
You could. Why would you want to do that? But you could.
It's getting gross.
That's getting silly, yeah.
Then there's the hyperlink button. So that's just text, right? So that's the text that I would do. And it has a navigation URI that automatically launches a URI for you, which is really terrific. There's the repeat button. So this is the button that I push and hold, and it continues. The click event repeats over and over and over. And then finally, there's the toggle button, which is sort of like a checkbox, but it's in button format, which allows me to toggle the is checked based on the user activity.
There's one missing from here as well. Should be a radio button as well.
There should be radio button.
Yeah.
Radio and checkbox.
Oh my.
Oh well, radio button. Oh, I see what you wait. Yeah. Oh, it's wherever checkbox is why.
Okay.
Because you know they're derived from the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're sort of selectors, aren't they? Rather than just just like primary buttons like these.
But it has the word button in it.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be in both places.
Yeah.
It could be in two places at once. It's sort of a meta button, a meta control. All right, let's talk about the text controls for just a second. So obviously displaying text is going to be important to your application. So the first and easiest is the text box. Now this is meant to take in data. Text box is like it's a text box. I mean, that's what it's called everywhere. Then we have the password box, which basically inherits from text box, but makes it so that all of your items are stars. And in Windows, we have this special thing where you can reveal the password, especially for touch scenarios. That's really great. Then the text block, this kind of gets developers sometimes. This is like our label control.
Yep.
And it's read-only, and it just is a way to display text. You can do it multi-line, you can change the color, you can do all kinds of neat things, but it's just displaying text. The rich edit box is like the text box, only it allows the user to create RTF, rich text format.
Yep.
RTF text, which includes things like making it bold, changing its color, and not just all at once, but little pieces here and there. Kind of like if you're editing in Word, only it's the raw RTF format.
Yep.
Then to display that, there's a text block just for it called the rich text block, which has a content that you can put in a series of paragraphs, or that RTF format actually is a little complicated. Have you ever tried to interact with it?
I haven't, no.
It's actually very complicated. But people who know it, they're masters of it. All right. Then we have these aren't really text controls. These are just a way of showing a type of text. So the first one is a bitmap icon. So this shows, in this case, just an image, but it's really intended to be the content of a button where the text usually would go. But we also have this idea of a font icon showing a glyph. So we have we have Sago UI symbol, which has all kinds of glyphs inside it. And then we also have Sago MDL2 assets.
Yep.
MDL2 stands for, do you know? Microsoft Design Language MDL.
Two. Yeah.
Yep. It doesn't stand
that's kind
for...
of. No, it doesn't at all, no. So these are the kind of symbols that are you'll see throughout Windows 10. These the nice, the light drawn icons that are the ones that all the built-in first-party apps are using. So
Real you thin, have, two-pixel lines.
Yep, really nice. So you want to take a look at those and make use of them yourself.
Yeah, that's right. There's also the symbol icon and then the path icon. Path is nice because it allows you to draw anything you want. So if it's not enough, and how do you draw? You can draw it with the path itself. That data would be the same data you would use from the path element. But in this case, it's meant to be quite small. And these are all really intended for for the app bar button in the end.
Yeah. So why don't you? Show us some of these in action.
I think that makes
sense. Time for a demo, I think.
Yeah, let's look at text control. So I've got this neat app UI basics sample that comes off of the Windows SDK. And the XAML team created this. And really, it's just terrific. Just terrific. And so you can kind of see here's the split view. See how it kind of slides out like that? And you can slide it back. And it's got the hamburger button if you want it. Right? It's kind of up to you. And then I can move around. And let me find the text controls. I'll go into that section. And so we started with the text block. So here's the text block. And this is a great sample because it also shows the syntax. So you can kind of see what it looks like whenever you're creating your own. And so this is just a simple syntax, but it goes to show how you can make it just plain text inheriting from all the styles inside Windows. Or you can set your own setup of styles with colors and italics and word wrapping and maximum lines and all the things that you can do. It's really great. And so this is a great sample of that. And you can see how it has a series of inlines inside it. So you can do multiple lines and multiple sections, each one being just a little bit different than the other, including a span. Almost reminds you of HTML that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Here, the password box. Remember I said there was a little glyph that shows for the reveal. There's that little glyph. And if I press it, that's my password.
Yeah. And the bottom one there, it shows how you can... Override that symbol if you don't want the default.
Right, you don't like those little dots.
Yeah, you can.
You can make little little hash symbols.
Yeah.
You say hash, don't you? Isn't that,
yeah.
Say it right.
Yeah.
Wanted to make it so you knew I was talking about. the rich text box is really terrific. It's empty. Let me just show you the rich text block. And so it shows you can have hyperlinks in the middle of text and all kinds of really nice things. Things that we actually demonstrated in regular text block as well. But you can add even more, including inline objects like images and things like that also. Let me scroll down a little. You can see one of the things that a rich text block allows is overflow. And so this overflow allows me to create multiple columns, which is pretty nifty.
Yeah.
I didn't want to jump out of that before I showed you that as well. And again, it's just terrific that all the syntax is here for how to do it. You can see how it's laid out. This isn't like column one. Well, they are columns, but this is a grid with three columns. And then there's a rich text block in each one of them. And then the one that has it is the overflow target. So then you just set up when it runs out of space, where do I put it? And you give it an overflow target. It's really neat. Really neat. All right, so those are just the basics around text controls. Let's talk about some of the selection controls. And so I think you're going to find...
Oh, here's my missing radio button.
Your radio button is right here, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
All right, so new to Windows 10 and just in time is the calendar view. So I really like this. That's the same control and just kind of goes to show the convergence of everything. Is that that's the same control that shows up whenever I try and look to see what the date is in Windows as well. And so it's also the same control whenever I load up Outlook and I'm using their calendar control. It's this calendar control, the same one that any developer can drag off of their XAML toolbox. Very cool. The date picker and the time picker allow me to choose those, and they both change depending on the device that they're on so that they fit just right and they're the right modality for touch only or for interacting with a mouse. That's really important and super nice. The toggle switch is a little different than the toggle button. I guess they could have, it's funny, does the toggle switch belong with the toggle button back in the button list? Probably it does, I don't know. Anyway, it's just like the toggle button, except for it goes side to side.
Yep.
And then there's the checkbox, which is just like the toggle switch, except for it shows a check or it hides a check, right? It's funny how these are really subtle differences.
Yep.
And then the radio button, which is also just like the checkbox, except for it shows a circle with a dot in it, with the added benefit of it also has a group name to allow it so that only one is checked at a time. That's sort of the benefit of the radio button. The combo box and list box. The combo box obviously is a drop-down, like picking your state. List box, you don't see the list box used very much. Most developers now are choosing the list view to do that, and we'll talk about the list view in a minute.
Yeah, the list box, you can kind of consider that
almost like a primitive.
Deprecated almost, yeah.
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 Well, I don't know if we've ever said that publicly.
Oh,
before.
Right, shall we withdraw that? It's still a totally valid control you can use.
We'll clean that up and post-edit. Oh, wait, that's the demo. All right, I wanted to show off just a little bit around these pickers and selection stuff. So let me just pull up the app because the app just makes it really easy. And so I can start with just pickers. And so let me go to, let me go home here and say, let's look at, let's see, right here. Let's start here. Here's the calendar view. And you know, really, it's a beautiful control. It's really, really nice. And it has all these different views, sort of the things that you would expect and kind of come to know and love on the web, you know, the really rich calendar experience. Multiple selects, where I can select multiple things if I want to. I can change the theme here so you can sort of see it in a different light, so to speak. And so that's really nice. And then here's the date picker. The date picker, I can drop down and pick whatever date it is. And one of the things you can see these little... what is it? The little chevron? That's the button that helps me as a mouse user. I click that and it allows me to go through it up and down. Now, if I were to use my finger, which I'm using now, you can see that those are all gone. That's because the control is very smart to know the modality that's being used, swapping between the way it needs to look for the different ones so that I don't have anything to tap. It just cycles through all of them. It's really nice. Then that's the date picker. Of course, the time picker looks just like that, basically, right? Conceptually. Let me go back to all my pickers here. Selection pickers. And maybe let's look at your radio button. Okay, that's what you would expect. One beautiful thing about it is if this radio button doesn't match the way you want it to look, like any XAML control, I can go in and tweak its template without unwinding all of its capabilities.
In many ways, a control is is more about its behavior than it, what it looks like, because you can totally override any XAML control by customizing the template.
That's right. That our to-do app for template 10, how it shows the star that you check and uncheck, that's a checkbox that's made to look like a star, and that's all it really is. All right, so that's just some basics. And let's talk about some different controls, maybe the more sophisticated controls or these collection controls. And really these, unlike the others that are more of a primitive control, these are really wrappers around many controls put together into one. So let's start with the one that's not like that. That is the items control. That is the primitive of all repeaters inside XAML. And so an items control can actually be instantiated by itself if you want it to be. And you set its item source, and that's the thing that it repeats. And so it's great for data binding. But all the rest that we're about to talk about inherit from items control. And so we'll start with the flip view. So the flip view, in fact, let me just switch over to this app so we can talk about it and see it at the same time. The flip view, let's see, this we would call this a collection flip view. There we go. So this is a flip view, and often these are full screen so that we can interact with them, right? And so because I'm a mouse, I can't just drag. I click these sides, and it goes from one to the other. But if I switch over to my finger, then I can. I can move this and interact with it in a more fluid way that kind of fits my expectation around touch. Right, so that part's really nice. That's the flip view. All it does is show one thing at a time and allows you to flip between them. It's that easy. The other control here is the grid view. So we're kind of accustomed to the grid view because of our start menu. It's laid out. It's a grid. Usually it's a uniform grid, or it uses the variable size wrap grid. And that just lays things out. And what's the difference between a grid view and a list view? The list view typically is a single column of item.
List view is a one column grid view.
It's a one column grid view. But as soon as you go into multiple columns and you go into things like media elements and you're showing images and you're showing rich content, the grid view suddenly has a couple UI tweaks that just makes it better to use than a list view. At its fundamental level, the grid view and the list view, they do look almost identical, right? And so from that point of view, you could use either one of them. If I had to default to anything, I always default to the grid view. Then you can set it up to be horizontal or vertical. And so that's just the way I like. All right, so that's the grid view and the list view. Another repeater, and it's kind of the standard staple bread and butter repeater of Windows. Makes everything look nice, has all the features, allows you to reorder inside of them. It's really great. Then we have the semantic zoom. So semantic zoom is a parent control that holds in it either a list view or a grid view, usually a grid view, and it allows you to zoom in. Let me just show these off. Let's start with a grid view. I want to kind of look at these. Let's see. Here's the grid view. So here's a grid of items. So these are all just little snapshots of the other pages. But you can see they're all laid out, and I can select them individually like this. I can also set them to be draggable. I can move things around. That part's nice. I can change its flow so that the flow reverses, so it starts from the right and goes to the left instead of left to right. I can include different type of imagery. I can change it so that it lays out differently. You can see it's getting thinner. So all of these looks are enabled all of these are enabled with the grid view because I get to choose what goes inside of each of these items, whatever that is, right? Swipe can be enabled, whether or not you click it and things like that. So every time I click it, you can see there's an event raised and jams all that text in that tiny little space.
Yes.
Well, hang on. I know the guy who made this, and I shouldn't say that. This is a work in progress. Hey, this is on GitHub.
It's on GitHub.
I could fix it and put in a pull request, right? You can't make fun of something if you don't. Aren't willing to fix it yourself. That's the grid view. Let's look at it next to a list view, but in the context here. So this is a list view. It looks awfully similar. This is laid out to be a single column, and then as I switch between them, it stays in a single column, and I would go in. I could obviously change the panel that this is built into, but by default, it's meant to be a single column. Has the same functionality. You can see these buttons and stuff are all exactly the same. Great. Then the semantic zoom, which is sometimes difficult to explain. So this is the semantic zoom. You can see it's a large, this is actually a hub that is putting all these, is a hub section with a grid inside it. But anyway, if I click on the hub title, it backs out to just this unique view, which is effectively a list view. And so the...
So it's a way of navigating a large collection of items. That's really what we're talking about. So you can zoom out to the kind of summary view for your collection, whatever that would be. In this case, it's the different names of the controls. But it could be, think of a list of contacts. You can zoom out to the first letter of the name. So you can actually go and find somebody by zooming out, going, clicking on B or something, and then going back into the kind of detail view.
Well, that's a great point, because if my list of contacts has 1,000 contacts in it, and I have to scroll, you know, ever so slowly to get down to Z, then or Z, there you go.
Thank you.
Then
I had no idea what you were talking about.
Users, you had no idea. Users are going to hate your app, so this allows you to jump, right? You can jump to whatever it is. Not only does it show them, but if I click on the one way down here, like text controls, it jumps to that section, which if it didn't, it'd be ridiculous. So we spoke ever so quickly on the hub section. Sorry, the hub control, which is made up of a series of hub sections, each one either arranged horizontally or vertically. And so classically in Windows 8, we saw this defaulted to a horizontal orientation. So you'd see your start menu, and then the first couple of buttons and the next couple of buttons, each one is a hub section. Or you'd create an application, and you would have, it's kind of a media consumption sort of application where you have the hub, so you can sort of browse things and drill into them further. That's what a hub is really meant to do. And because that's not a common scenario for apps, it's, you know, to create that sort of thing, you don't see hubs used all that much. Now the default orientation, you see it used, at least the more common orientation, I should say, is vertical, so that you're scrolling vertically. Horizontal scrolling, you just see less and less of it, more and more it's vertical. You could still use the hub control, just swap its orientation, and you're good to go. That sample with semantic zoom was a vertical hub. And then finally, there's the content control. Content control is a weird control. That's just it has no look at all, right? You can't see it. It only takes a piece of data, like a model or something, like a user's model, and then you also have to give it what it looks like.
So, so the key property there is the control template, and that's where you define the layer of whatever data items you have bound to this content control. That's how you define how it will actually end up being presented. So out of the box, drag it out of the toolbox and drop it on your page, and it doesn't look, it has has no appearance until you give it a template.
Now, this is valuable because the template you're using, more than likely and hopefully, is a template you've used somewhere else. So it allows you to show records all over the place, and you can just point to a template that you're using. And so let's say it's like a user, and that user appears all over the place. You could have the user there, 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 and there. Each one is just a content control pointing to the same template that knows how to show a user properly, and you don't have to repeat that UI over and over again. And it's very lightweight. It's not the same as a user control, which is totally different, and is a heavier implementation to kind of get the same effect. There's a couple other things you would do with the user control, adding functionality. Then we have all these templates over on the side. So data template, item panel template, control template. These are all ways for me to define how things are going to look. For data template, I'm defining how a record is going to look when it's repeated in a repeater. But for a control template, I'm defining how my radio button or my checkbox is going to look whenever I add that to my canvas as well. Right, so then I have these things inside repeaters, and that's kind of where the content and items presenter go. And there's the content control. Look, see how you can put it in two places?
Yeah.
You could have done that with the radio button. No, but I didn't. All right, so that's a special list of controls for sure. Let's look at some of the syntax. I think it's neat to be able to step through it. So this is pretty classic grid view syntax. So this is bound to a source. You can see it's bound in this case up at the top to my CSV. So let's see. Then I have the data template. So this is since this is a repeater, every single thing in my CSV, whatever that is.
So every item in the collection that you've bound this to is going to be displayed using the layout defined in that data template.
That's exactly right. So this allows me to go into the data template and tweak it ever so slightly, knowing that every single record gets the benefit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I can even extract that data template and put it up into a file and share it almost like a CSS file is shared across multiple web pages. It's really great. This is the syntax for the list view. Hopefully it looks very, very, Hopefully it looks very similar to the grid view. That's because it's almost identical in syntax. It's just default look and feel is slightly different. So it's easy to implement because you only have to learn one control, and then it's easy to use because you just drop it onto the right context. Great. So the flip view is just as simple because, remember, everything inherits from items control. That's the reason everything sort of looks the same.
Yeah.
They just implement the UI slightly differently based on their use case. So a flip view, again, you set up the template, whatever it is. This case, I have an image, you know, and I can do all my bindings and things that I want to in there and inside the data template, and it repeats that for every item.
It's worth saying as well that XAML is kind of laid out top down. So the order you see it there within that data template, that picture you're looking down on the bottom right there is the image goes actually fills the whole of that grid. And then overlaying it at the vertical alignment of bottom, we've got a border.
Yeah,
with a background which gives you that sort of semi-opaque dark block laying over the bottom of that image, and inside the border we've got the text, which is what you're seeing on the left there, the word beach. So how you can kind of build stuff up.
That's actually an interesting use for border, because we talked about how border now is built into controls, but a text block doesn't have a background color, so you couldn't actually accomplish this without it.
Right,
that's kind of fascinating. It includes, by the way, this background color includes two things. It includes the color 0000 is black, and then has this A5 at the front, indicating it's alpha.
The opacity.
So A5 is, I believe, alpha of 50%, but I have actually forgotten the syntax. But you can see that you can see through it ever so slightly. It's a nice Bing image. It's nice. All right, so also we talked about stretch. Remember that? We talked about stretch in the context of view box. It does the same thing for images, what you want to do to that image if it doesn't fit. And so in this case, it's uniform to fill, which makes sure there's no black spot, there's no letter boxing, and it's perfectly filled, but it does mean some edge may be clipped if it's not the same aspect ratio. Beautiful. All right, so this is the hub syntax. What you should take away from the hub syntax is basically there's multiple hub sections. So in this case, you can see all three hub sections. Each three is over here. Here's the base one. And then you can see top beaches. Then you can see top trips. And then there is nothing at the end, but there's empty space there. So that's why you see it. And so the background is of the entire hub. And then each individual one is set up with a data template. And inside that data template, you put whatever you want. And so in this case, it's beaches and news and things like that. But it's a simple syntax and a nice way to lay things out. And unlike many of the other controls, the hub really introduces a lot of spacing and text sizes so that your app looks good fast.
It's typically used with rich images as a background and then overlaying content, as you're seeing with this example here. And actually notice also the text blocks there. We got the text is the actual, obviously, the text content.
Content, yeah.
It's the text, not content as with a button. But with a text block, it is the text property and then summary of top beaches here. But actually something we're going to come on to talk to in just a minute, we apply a style to that. So we're using the body text block style. These are these reusable styles that you can use over and over to give a consistency for how text is rendered on your UI. And we'll look at that in just a moment.
It reminds me of CSS classes.
Yeah.
But it's so much more than a CSS class because it's a theme resource and not we would usually refer to it as a static resource. So something you link to but doesn't change. That's a CSS class. A theme resource is injected by the operating system. So when my application runs, I get what it looks like when it's supposed to be dark or what it looks like when it's supposed to be light. And that theme resource shifts because a user, for the sake of accessibility, may actually come in and say, I need this to be high contrast because I have trouble seeing all this. It's injected into my application as a high contrast color instead. So theme resources are very dynamic, and it enables my application to have a lot of functionality and really serve the user in a better way.
Yep.
Terrific. All right, so now the app bar. So this is the way we engage. So, you know, we kind of like the ribbon in WPF. We have app bars and command bars. So there's an app bar versus a command bar. The command bar is the thing that works everywhere. It works on every device, and it reorients itself depending on the type of device it's in.
And what's interesting is it used to be in 8.1 either only at the top of the page or on the bottom of the page. Mm. And you'd have these top app bars and bottom app bars, and the bottom bar of controls on a Windows phone screen, that was the bottom app bar.
Yeah.
But now you can put them anywhere. It's a very useful container for putting a sort of strip of buttons, a ribbon control.
I can't wait for developers to start putting command bars all over their applications.
I already am.
Are you? Dev-zyners. Yeah. The app bar, by contrast, works just like the command bar, only it allows anything to go in there. So if you needed a slider in there or an image or a picker or whatever. However, it doesn't reorient itself based on the device family that it's in. That's up to the developer. So if you want ultimate flexibility, use the app bar, but you're responsible then for making sure it looks great. The command bar does everything automatically for you. And then inside the command bar are these three possible things. I can put an app bar button. I can put an app bar toggle button, which is just like a regular toggle button. And then I could put a separator, that little line that kind of groups things together. The flyout controls that we have, these would be things like pop-ups. And so it's a little bit different than a pop-up window in the web. This is just controls that sit on top of other controls. And the base primitive is pop-up. And you can use that to create a pop-up if you want. But usually you use something like the content dialog. The content dialog is a lot like the message dialog in Windows 8.x.
Yep.
And the message dialog is on its way to be deprecated and replaced by the content dialog. And so content dialog allows me to do everything that the message dialog could do, with the addition of I can also put XAML content inside it. So if I need a checkbox, I need two checkboxes and a radio button, and I need a little spot for you to sign your name, whatever it is, the content dialog can do it. So it's like a super message dialog. Then there's the flyout itself. This is the thing that pops up over a button, the thing that pops out like on the right there for that context menu. And then I also have pre-built flyouts, like the menu flyout that sits on a button. Tooltip is kind of a primitive by itself as well. It allows me to just create a tooltip. It's really nice. Let's take a look at the flyout controls so we can get a feel for what they look like. Let's see. Here's some flyout controls, right? So here's the content dialog, which we talked about. It pops up, looks like a dialog. Yep. A little bit different than Windows 8. It used to go all the way to the left, all the way to the right. You don't see that, right? This is a different look and feel for Windows 10. Then we have just this is the standard pop-ups. It pops up right over in the context of this button. Here's another one, pops up right here. This one's nice, empty cart, and then you put the button inside the pop-up of, yes, I confirm to empty my cart. Real easy to do. Then the menu flyout is sort of like a context menu. Right, so it pops up, and I can drill down into it and do whatever it is that I want. But then there is actually a context menu, which is basically this, and it allows me to right-click in order to get it. It's really great.
And all these controls are in the standard, in the UWP. They're available on all our devices, phone and desktop, just the same. But the rendering may change. We said this before. They have the intelligence built in to be adaptive, so they know they're running. And sometimes they will look a bit different. And that sample app you're showing there, you're running it on desktop, but that you can run that on the phone and see how they all work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You totally can. And I can't wait to see what a button flyout looks like in HoloLens. I actually don't know what it looks like.
Yes.
But I mean, it's in everything, right?
Yep.
So it's there.
Yep.
All right, so another group that's fun to talk about. So we have the progress indicators. We also have media and inking. We'll just group them all together in this case. And so the progress bar and ring are the things that allow you to show that something's going on. And the progress bar is that it can be indeterminate, which means it just constantly goes, or it can be determinate, which is kind of shows a 0 to 100% completion, and then the ring just spins and spins and spins. An image is how I show an image, and it's related to the media element, which is how I could also show an image, or I could play audio, or I could show a video, and it has a full set of playback controls that you can see on the right, including the ability to attach to the casting API, and right from that control to cast out to any device, like a DLNA device, that you may have attached. So that part's really neat. The inking canvas is something else I can drag on, and it allows me to do finger inking, stylus inking, mouse inking, and of course, digitized pen inking as well, on everything, because these are all UWP controls that belong across every type of device. So I want to have inking on my phone fully supported.
And the inking in general has had a huge engineering effort with Windows 10 to make it really performant and really low latency. It's a really nice feature. Part of the features we've got for supporting natural user interface into UWP apps.
The capture element is kind of like the preview window for your camera. And you can kind of interact with your camera using the capture element. Let's take a quick look at just the inking real quick. So this will be nice and fun. Let's see, I can go to inking. What? Let's see, right here, bam, got it. And so I can use my finger, right? It looks really nice and smooth. I can use my mouse, looks very not smooth, but you can see it's actually felt the difference. It knows that one's a finger. It knows that one's a mouse. I can also change things. I can make it a highlighter. Of course, if I do that, I'm going to want to change its color to, say, to green and make it much bigger. And then it doesn't erase. It just kind of draws it behind it is what it's kind of really doing, right? Really, really nice stuff that you can do there, as well as the ability to turn that into text. So if I have handwriting, I can try and read it. Obviously, it's not going to read anything from that little drawing, but if that's part of my application, that's built in as well. Powered by the Ink Presenter under the hood, that's the set of APIs that allows all of that to happen.
So you can just put an ink canvas and put all your content inside it, and immediately you've got a drawable surface that somebody can draw on your UI.
Yeah, that's totally right. Yeah, that's totally right.
And you can capture, obviously, you can capture the drawing, or you can actually recognize.
It's meant for low memory and low resources. Recognize There's it. No excuse not to use it. I mean, it really isn't, other than, I can't imagine, actually. I can't imagine.
Lots of fun things you can do with that.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. All right. You had mentioned resources, and I had brought up theme resources as the thing that Windows injects and injects for the sake of high contrast or whatever. But we also have these custom resources, and not just styles like we were talking about, but we also have custom resources of things like font size. So I can set up all of my default font size to be, 16 pixels, let's say. Of course, we know that's e-pixels, that's effective pixels. But I can set that in a global location that way, or I can set up colors and things like that as well. But I can also set up, of course, styles. And one thing that's nice about styles and very unique is they can cascade, so I can have one style based on another style, so it gets more and more complicated as used in different situations, but they all have a fundamental base so that they're the same, and I can tweak them all at one time. So for example, I want everything to have the same color, but I have five different places that text is shown and for different reasons. I can have a style for each based on one that actually sets its color. Then we have the templates, so we were talking about that with users before, and so I can set up all these templates to make data look a certain way or make a control look a certain way. I can move those out then into a resource that is at the scope of the entire page, so everything on the page gets to reuse that resource, but I can move that out to the entire application, so across every page, anything in the application can use those resources as well. So scoping resources is a big deal. Sometimes it's a little tricky to get the syntax right, but not when you're in Blend. Blend has a resources tab that allows you to drag resources all over the place, and as it does, it updates everything, including a symbolic rename that allows you to rename different resources that you have, and it updates them throughout your entire application to make sure that everything is okay. It's really great. It detects it really fast as well. This is the UI when I'm creating a new resource to select what its scope is going to be. You can see I can pick application or this document, or I could go all the way out to a file, which is a resource dictionary. And then it just determines on when I bring in that file. I could bring in that at a document or at a application level as well. All right, this is the best part. Some screenshot walkthroughs. So I think let's go ahead and see if we can do a couple of these and talk about how you would create this UI. So this is one of the early screenshots that I just took actually off of Windows 10 of the money application and how you would create this, Andy, with different pieces of UI. Like just what would you do? So for example, just up in the top corner is the hamburger button. Yep. How would you create just that? So the button control, there's no border. What would you do?
To customize the to take the button and you make a custom control template for that.
I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. You can also use the style for a button that makes it text only, and maybe put it behind a or in front of a grid or a background or a rectangle perhaps. And but my way is the cheap way to do it. Your way is the reliable way to do it. If I recustomize or retemplate the button, then I have the ability to handle hover. I have the ability to handle checked and things like that as well. So the search box over on the side, we didn't talk about this new control called the autocomplete. And the autocomplete control replaces the search box that was in Windows 8. And this is easy enough to throw in there, but it gives you a lot of cool functionality as well as a rich selection dialog that the user might have whenever they are, whenever they're typing in it. So this section over the right, I think maybe the whole UI maybe is a grid. I could set that out as a grid. But if I were just going to recreate this section, probably because it's a known set of rows and a known set of columns, I'd be tempted to make this a grid as well because I know it would be flexible for layout. So you can see like open right here, right? This is just a text block. But then how do you think they did these lines right underneath? It could be, there's a lot of possibilities. I would guess... What would you do?
There is the primitive control for
line.
The line, line. Right.
You could draw the line. This could be the bottom border of a larger control here, right? This could be an individual grid. This could actually be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 grids stacked on top of each other in a stack panel, each with a specific size, or maybe maxed out to an outer grid, and then with horizontal alignment to the left is one text box block. Horizontal alignment to the right is another text block, and then it has a bottom border of a light gray line. That would be an easy way to do it for sure. Wouldn't even need more than one cell inside that grid, and then just repeat it as well. But another way to do it, which would also be very effective, is to use the relative panel. Yep. So the relative panel would say, for example, this open would be the anchor, and I would make it in the top left, and everything would be spaced because I would set them all to be have some sort of style. And then I could have a line that is below it. And then below that line, I could have the next item. And then below that item, I would have the next line. And then each one of those would be set up. And I wouldn't have to be nesting things, like nesting stack panels and grids and worrying, you know, which one is what. And then I could say the first number here, this opening amount, is actually to the left of open, but it's right aligned to the panel. So I can start laying things out that way, and it's really not stretching and growing. It's always aligned to the left. It's always aligned to the right, depending on however it is that I want. So that's probably, well, let's just say that's another way to do it. Prior to the relative panel, I would have put this in a grid, maybe even a stack of grids, and just trusted XAML to render it in an efficient way. Here's the weather application. So this is Reykjavik's weather a couple days ago, and there's a couple neat sections here. So the first, in order to get this at the top, this looks like it might be a tab control, so I'd be tempted to consider a pivot, because you can retemplate a pivot control to be a tab control in a real easy way. But I also know these are probably really navigation buttons. These are probably just buttons that are set with a style of text only. And so now I know these are likely just to be buttons sitting up here in a stack panel that goes horizontally. And then depending on which one you are in, I would set for the code behind to detect that and to make one is a bold color. And then I can reuse that code anywhere that way. Another section here would be just this individual day. So the individual day, this is a vertically aligned stack panel that takes a text block that says Sunday 10, and then right under it probably uses like a bitmap icon or a bitmap glyph, bitmap text, bitmap.
Yeah, well, symbol icon.
Symbol icon. Where I can specify what bitmap I want to show.
Yeah.
But then in order to do this next one, you would think this is probably a stack panel that's horizontal that has two things in it. But the reality is this is probably just a text block that has two run statements, inline statements. And the first one uses a glyph, and then the next run statement is the actual amount bound to whatever the precipitation likelihood is. and then the next one just a text block, and the next one just a text block. The whole thing is probably a stack panel, probably in a list of stack panel, in another stack panel that is oriented to the horizontally. So that's the entire thing. Probably it's just a stack panel. Doesn't have to be, because this is a known quantity. It doesn't have to be ultimately flexible. So since it's a known quantity, I could easily make this a grid as well. One little thing here is this little arrow that shows the current day. That's such an easy thing to do. And this isn't a glyph, it's not a font, it's a triangle. And it's using the path to draw a triangle and then fill it, right? Change it so it's filling. So you can set 3 points so it draws the triangle at the skew or the ratios that you want. And then you just set it up, the whole thing. I would imagine there is, if this is a grid, you would just align it to the bottom. And just, you would have, there's probably one in every single cell, and it's probably hidden depending on what day it is. If it's not in every single cell, then it's just moved from one cell to another inside the grid, one column to another depending on what day it is. So easy thing to do. Looks a little tricky, but it's really not. I would actually kind of tweak it. It has kind of a gray line. Doesn't look like it matches just right. This is the preview version of the weather app anyway. So what's nice, Andy, is that most of the screens that you're seeing, even on our first party apps, are just using standard controls.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And it just shows that those rich UIs that you're seeing, there's no great magic about it.
They're
a skilled designer, of course, but using the standard controls can really get you a real long way, can it?
It can. It really can, including all of the benefits of adaptability and things like that as well.
Yeah.
All right, so we talked about the emerging XAML story. We talked about how XAML itself has become really a fundamental piece of the UI story and UI of the and platform for Microsoft. And we went through many, I would say 90% of the controls that XAML developers have at their disposal. Each one, of course, tailored for the Windows 10 experience, as well as each of the devices and their shape and size.
Yep, and a good number of them have this some intelligence built into them to adapt, to help you to create adaptive UIs that will work well across different screens.
As well as being fully accessible as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have any reason that you maybe use a screen reader or something like that, these are the controls that make it totally possible. Keyboard, mouse, touch, everything is all built into them. You might be tempted to build your own control, but you better know what you're doing if you're going to do that, because
yes,
these give you a lot.
Yeah.
And then just a little bit around screenshot walkthroughs where we could see of the applications that Microsoft has started putting together. You know, how do they do it? It's a fun exercise to look around just the normal set of apps and figure out, you know, I wonder how I would have done it if I were the one doing it. Pretty powerful.
Yep. Good. So we're going to take a meal break, and we'll be back in about an hour. Hope you'll join
Breakfast
us then.
Break.
Yeah, join us then to continue our look at the developer's guide to Windows 10 Insider Preview.
See you soon.
See you.